should is short and allows little time for reflection. But I do not think that the result was the wrong one, except that I should have found a way to save both girls. It is, as the High Priest says, a dangerous game to play. Archon Anasta spoke for the first time, her voice deep and thick with age.
Invoke church law over common law outside our doors, and with both hands you are taking the Emperor's power as your own.
Also true, Archon Anasta. I could never argue politics against the woman who taught it to me in the first place. The abbess managed to smile, as if she were not yoked and bleeding, but instead discussing the finer points of academia over a school desk. However, at no point in removing Nona from Harriton did I invoke one law above another. I made no mention of my office. I simply reminded the guards of my long friendship with Warden James, and said that I was taking the girl. None of them attempted to stop me, or even ordered me to desist, and so it seemed a perfectly reasonable assumption that they were happy for me to take her. I am more than willing to submit to any test of truth. I hear that there are graduates of the Academy who can deduce whether they are being told a lie, and...
The truth is a very nebulous concept.
Archon Philo took on a still more doleful look, and returned his gaze to his lap.
Ha!
The bark of laughter burst from Archon Kraton.
They didn't even try to stop you!
No.
Well, it's their incompetence. If they let you take the girl, that's tacit permission!
He smacked his fist against his thigh. If you have nothing more to say... High Priest Jacob, realizing that he was still standing, sat heavily in his grand chair. If you maintain your refusal to apologize, then we can move on to the sentencing.
I move for the charges to be thrown out.
Archon Kraton waved a hand dismissively above his head.
Who's with me?
Kraton! The High Priest struggled back out of his chair.
You would be advised to give this matter serious con... I have my own mind, Jacob. Old debt and old secrets be damned if they mean selling my soul for taxes gold.
Archon Philo raised his face to the room.
There seems to be no case to answer.
He didn't sound happy about it, but Nona wondered if he had ever sounded happy about anything. Archon Anasta fixed Abbess Glass with a stare so hard that Nona could imagine reaching up to find it a physical thing, an invisible bar of iron between them.
This could have been done better, Glass.
I know.
Cleaner, sharper, clearer. As I always instructed.
The Archon narrowed already narrow and bitten lips.
This is muddy, messy, unsure.
Abbess Glass bowed her head.
But the child should not suffer your mistake. There is no case to answer here.
The abbess slumped, a guard stepping forward to prevent her falling. Archon Nevis, the decision rests with you. The High Priest walked to stand behind the fat Archon's chair. You, at least I know, can be relied upon to understand where the best interests of the Church lie. Archon Nevis glanced across the line of his fellow Archons. He looked nervous, sweat making small ringlets in the grey hair sticking to his forehead.
It's been more years than either of us would care to mention.
Nevis, Abbess Glass said, shaking off the guard and standing straight. Speaking as if there were only the two of them there, Nona and the rest no more than shadows. That boy and that girl would not recognize us. We are old, changed. But I remember. One time you said, once, that I could ask anything of you. I doubt you thought it would take me this long to ask it. That one time is now. That anything is this.
I remember.
Nevis went still more pale. Every vein blew upon the marble of his flesh.
We were children, Shella, playing children's games. You can't expect.
It was in the focus of the moon, Nevis. The ice lit red about us and began to steam.
And the crakes took to the sky on their song.
Very touching, High Priest Jacob brought his staff down with a crack. But Archon Nevis is no longer a moon-eyed boy panting over a tanner's girl. Great ancestor woman! Nevis honors the debts of the entire church. The master of the faith's coffers concerns himself with debts of a rather more adult nature. Archon, let's end this farce.
Aye.
Archon Nevis held his finger to his chest, out of the high priest's view. A one for the Abbess's eyes.
This case has no merit. It cannot stand.
Across the hall, murmurs of approval spread among the guards and attendants. Outside, cries of delight went up, though how word reached the women and girls in front of the hall so swiftly, Nona had no idea. Archon Kratton was already on his feet, his chair rocking behind him.
Get the damned yoke off her! She's an abbess of the church!
Nona found herself standing straight and unsupported, her restraints no burden now, a shout of defiance on her lips. A guard moved to obey, the heavy key ready in his hand. The loud crack of the high priest's staff against stone cut through raised voices.
Overruled!
What? Nona stared. Even the Archons looked shocked. She looked up at the abbess.
He can't!
Of all of them, only Abbess Glass seemed unsurprised.
That's a big step, Jacob. Are you sure you want to?
This is a court of law, and you will address me by my title.
High Priest Jacob slumped back into his chair of office.
Your concern is noted, Abbess. I'm sure your concern is for me rather than for your own imminent and uncomfortable exit from this convent, and from the church as a whole.
Abbess Glass pursed her lips.
The office of High Priest rests upon four pillars. It's my duty to counsel you against kicking them out from beneath you.
Noted.
The High Priest turned to his black-clad assistant, scratching at her scroll.
Make sure you get that down, Greha. Now, to the sentencing.
I took Nona from the prison because she is the shield. The ancestor told me to do it in a vision.
Abbess Glass didn't raise her voice, but somehow she gathered all the attention that the High Priest held a moment before and focused it upon herself in the quiet of the hall.
Nonsense! Nonsense!
The High Priest tried to wave the idea away.
This is foolishness! Desperation! It would not have been credible if these words were the first out of your mouth on our arrival. To speak them a moment before your sentence, to have your tongue split? Well, it's beneath you. It's beneath an abbess of the ancestor.
What? Nona wanted to ask what a shield was, but the abbess set her large foot over Nona's small one.
The shield will have almost as many enemies as the Argatha. It was my duty to protect her, until she is able to protect both herself and the Chosen One. She is just a child. Her safety lay in secrecy. Unfortunately, now you have forced a damaging choice. Reveal the truth of her identity, or let you drown her in ignorance.
This is ridiculous, Abbess Glass. Anyone can claim a holy vision to save themselves from justice.
Were not my first words to you in this court an invitation to consider why I would do such a thing. Rather than giving serious thought to that question, you prefer to blame it on a mothering instinct that was singularly absent before my courses ran dry. I ask you once more, knowing what you know of me, do you seriously believe the words that came from your mouth?
Nona knew herself a stranger to tact, but even to her ears the abbess didn't seem to be doing a good job at convincing a proud man to change his mind. She gave him no retreat, no escape, and yet he held all the power. Not even the Archons could tell him what to do. High Priest Jacob cleared his throat, gathered his robes about him as if he might be chilled, and stamped his staff beside his chair.
"I am unconvinced, Abbess. The sentence of this court is that—"
"I demand the test."
"Test? What test?"
The High Priest glanced to either side as if missing something. Answering his rhetoric, a black-clad assistant leaned in to whisper into his ear. The High Priest frowned, the furrows across his forehead growing deeper from one second to the next. Then a smile.
"You want to set this child before the Red Sisters, and let them shoot her full of arrows? It's certainly a more interesting form of execution than drowning the girl."
The assistant raised his head from the open book in his arms and leaned in again.
"The child would have to agree to such an ordeal, though. Apparently."
"No!"
The pressure on Nona's foot increased as the abbess shook her head.
"That would be ridiculous. The ordeal of the shield is for any sister that claims the title. It was never intended for a novice. Certainly not one who has worn the habit little more than a week. The test I refer to is the one that became legal precedent after Sister Cain's vision of the three arcs."
The abbess lifted her foot, freeing Nona's.
"You will have to look in Lorca's book and ecclesiastical proof. I believe Archon Philo's attendant has a copy at the bottom of the pile he has stacked by the Archon's chair."
"Why don't you save us the bother, Abbess Glass, and just tell us?"
The High Priest clapped one hand over the fist of the other and rested his chin upon it, elbows on his knees. A smile twitched across the abbess's lips.
"I'm tempted to say that I must affirm my vision to each Archon, and as a bride of the ancestor that would be sufficient."
She held up a hand as High Priest Jacob raised his head to object.
Sadly, the ordeal that Sister Cain endured to prove her words was a rather unpleasant one.
A quaver in her voice now. Archon Anasta spoke into the quiet moment.
"The nun in question held her hand just above the flame of a votive candle until she was believed. The precedent is that either the presiding official is swayed to believe the testimony and allows the witness to withdraw their hand, or the witness withdraws their hand without permission, and by doing so admits the lie. Or, I suppose, the candle burns out, which should be proof enough for anyone of something extraordinary. The whole thing is archaic, barbaric, and rife with superstition. But then again, the prophecy to which Abbess Glass refers is archaic and rife with superstition, and the punishment that High Priest Jacob seems determined to impose carries an even greater degree of barbarism and antiquity."
The old woman raised her hands in a gesture of helplessness.
"Who has a candle?"
The Archon's request passed via chain of assistants and guards to the sisters waiting outside, and a silence followed as presumably nuns scattered in search of a votive candle.
"How will burning your hand change his mind?"
Nona asked. Her wrists had started to hurt and some sensation had returned to her fingers, though the yoke was no less tight.
"He won't care. He likes to hurt things."
"The High Priest will see the depth of my conviction. Every second he delays will shame him before the Archons, against whom he has set his opinion. He will know that a woman who can stand the flame is capable of anything, and it will sway him."
The abbess spoke with a calm serenity, her eyes fixed on High Priest Jacob in his chair across the chamber. Nona wondered how Abbess Glass could be so calm. She had burned her fingers in the embers of a fire when she could barely walk, and the heat had seared those hot moments of agony into her mind ever since.
"If a woman like that is capable of anything, then she's capable of lying, too."
"Would he care about that? This has never been about truth.
The abbess kept her eyes on High Priest Jacob. If he decides to hurt me, he will also at the end of it have to set me loose in the world. You think he has the balls for that? Nona knew she would be sweating in the abbess's position, looking for an escape, ready to fight. But the woman looked so serene. You're doing it, aren't you? That mind game Sister Pan teaches. Shadowing the path, the novices called it. Not following it like a Quantal could, but coming close enough to alter the way their minds worked.
Serenity?
The abbess made a slow nod. Nona frowned. Serene or not, the abbess would still burn. A young church guard bustled in, cloak rain-splattered, helm askew. She approached the archons, clutching a votive candle, as if it were a holy artifact.
"Remove the prisoner's yoke and bring her before us," the high priest called. "Set a table there, and a rope, to keep her from raising her hand too high above the flame."
"That hardly seems necessary.
She's proving herself to me, not to you, Archon Kratton. And I deem it necessary."
He wiped at his mouth.
"Bring the girl, too."
Beside Nona, a guard was working with a heavy key, rotating a screw that allowed the separation of the yoke that held Abbess Glass's hands up to either side of her head. The device made a painful sound, sometimes a squeal, sometimes a deeper scraping.
"It would be best if you looked away for this, Nona dear," the abbess said, easing one hand out from the yoke as the guard moved to release the other.
"Don't interrupt. You won't be helping. I'll need to concentrate." Nona watched as the yoke was lifted from around Abbess Glass's neck, and, flexing her wrists, she walked out to where the candle had been set upon a table. Nona wondered if the abbess had saved her from the noose, as she first said, on some point of principle, outraged at the corruption and failure of the Empire law, or because she valued the skills Nona had shown. Or had she truly been led by a vision? Or was that claim made in desperation? None of it made sense. The abbess had said words are steps along a path. The important thing is to get where you're going. Nona wondered if the abbess knew where she was going now, or if the game had got away from her the day she walked out of Harriton prison holding Nona's hand. The church guard who led Nona after the abbess reminded her of the man who had led her to the gallows, tall, graying, probably someone's grandfather. If the abbess failed her trial, then he might be the man who pushed Nona from the edge of the sinkhole and sent her sailing down towards the water.
"She's secure?"
The High Priest descended from his dais to stand over the table till he was almost face to face with Abbess Glass, as if concerned that there might be trickery. Two ropes bound around the abbess's sore wrist led to opposite legs of the table where they had been secured. She could move the hand from side to side, but not raise it. The votive candle, fat but short, sat close by, its flame flickering as guards moved around the table checking the abbess's restraints.
"Abbess," the High Priest gestured to the flame, "I wait to be convinced."
Four archons leaned forward in their chairs and the room held its breath. Nona could hear the rain drumming on the roof above them, splashing from high gutters. Abbess Glass moved her open palm above the flame, a single inch between the tip of its tongue and her skin. The trial hardly looked dramatic. To prove themselves, Nona knew the wild men and Dern hung from trees by ropes attached to iron hooks set beneath the muscle of their chests. But despite the blood and groaning of such theatrics, the abbess's trial held its own fascination. Every person in the hall had their own memory of Fire's Kiss, the one that taught them the lesson you need learn only once. Hot. Don't touch. Abbess Glass kept her gaze upon the High Priest, upon the cold grey of his eyes and the smirk twitching across his lips. Amusement? Embarrassment? Her face remained serene, and Nona imagined that in her mind the abbess must be following the broad strokes of some path that led to peace, gentle turns finding their way to the quiet places of the world where the wind holds its tongue and the light of the dying sun rests gentle upon the ground. Long moments passed.
Ah!
A quick intake of breath. Tension in the abbess's cheeks, a distant pain in her eyes.
You should give up this foolishness now, Shella.
High Priest Jacob leaned in, his voice falling to a murmur.
You could burn your whole hand to blackened bones, and I'd still know you were lying. This time you're out. You've played your game and lost.
Abbess Glass clenched her teeth, eyes wide and locked on the High Priest's, her breath tight in her throat.
Glass. I am Glass.
A faint sizzling noise came from beneath her palm. Nona sniffed. It could have been bacon, hot from the pan and heaped in the refectory bowls. Her stomach growled even as she retched. The abbess's breath gasped in tight little bursts, counted out the duration of her ordeal. Nona's shortness made her the sole witness to the flame's damage, first turning a circle of the abbess's palm red, then raising white blisters upon it, then setting them to bubble and blacken. Tears filled the abbess's eyes and rolled across her cheeks, sweat beaded on her brow, gathered in the folds beneath her chin. The scream that broke from her came so sudden and so loud that Nona jerked backwards and half the guards reached for their swords. The abbess fell too, gasping and groaning, deep guttural noises that hurt to hear. She strained to raise her hand, but the ropes held. Her arm shook with effort but moved neither left nor right to escape the heat.
"This is pointless!"
The High Priest threw up his hands, looking around at the Archons.
"Give it up, Shella! You're embarrassing yourself!"
If anything, it was the High Priest who looked embarrassed, almost as red in the face as the abbess. She was beyond any shame, deep in some place where nothing existed but her and her pain.
"Ah!"
A roar of agony this time. Nona could see fats dripping down from the puckered ruin above the candle's flame. It seemed to reach higher now, as if trying to lick her.
Ah!
A cry so awful that Nona would have put her hands to her ears if they were free. Nona saw again the fluid motion with which the abbess's clever hand had caught her image on her work scroll back in Sister Wheel's class. How would those fingers function now? Could they ever draw again?
"Move your hand!"
Nona found it was her saying it. She wasn't alone, though. All around the room, men and women were muttering it.
"Move your hand!"
Archon Philo's assistant lost his composure and shouted at the abbess, his own hands clenched together, white-knuckled.
"This is ridiculous!"
The High Priest stamped his staff in anger.
"I won't be blackmailed!"
Another roar of agony cut him off. Nona could hardly see for tears. Her nose ran and she couldn't wipe it. Her throat was raw with shouting for the abbess to stop. High Priest Jacob's face was set in a rigid, sickly grimace. He turned and walked back to his chair, taking the 3 steps to the dais in one, his journey punctuated by the abbess's screams. He turned, tucked his robes behind his knees and sat down.
"I will watch the flesh!"
Another scream.
"Drip from your bones before I let you sell me this!"
A scream that had nothing human in it.
"This pathetic lie!"
"I'll take the shield test!"
Nobody heard Nona, amongst the shouting and the abbess's almost unbroken howling. She lunged forward, smashing the weight of her yoke into the table. The candle jolted, fell, and rolled away.
"I'll take the shield test!"
Nona yelled it into the stunned silence. For a moment, nobody spoke. Then the abbess collapsed and everyone started talking at once. Chapter 17. The rain hit Nona cold and hard as she stepped through the doors of Hart Hall, the shock of it seeming to wake her to the truth of her situation. Standing in the chamber before the Archons in their finery had been so far outside her experience that events took on a dreamlike quality, ending in a nightmare. Out there in the freezing rain, the grim reality regained its hold.
She could see little but the backs of the guards leading the way, and to either side, almost lost in the downpour, the grey shapes of sisters and novices huddled in their habits, pressed to the walls for shelter. The icy water burned on her wrists where the yoke had taken her skin off. She flexed her hands rapidly, knowing she would need them soon. The rain ran off her fingertips as if they were pipes spraying it from within. The procession kept a brisk pace. Nona had no problem keeping up. Free now from the yoke's weight, she felt as if she were floating, as if with one hard kick she could shrug off the earth's bonds and reach the roof of Blade Hall, a dark shape wavering ahead of them. A few moments later they were through the doors with more men pushing in behind them. Two guards took Nona off to one side, paying no real care to how they held her, as if she were really just a little girl, not a prisoner accused of murder preparing to take some trial that few full-fledged Red Sisters would try. The High Priest and Archons came through the doors and stood dripping on the sand, finery bedraggled. Nona's mother used to say that the rain didn't care how long you'd spent brushing your hair. It had fallen you just the same. The villagers had it that there were gods in the rain, just as there were gods in each river and wood. You could pray to them, but generally by the time they got close enough to hear you, it was too late to stay dry. Once through the doors, the Archons didn't get long enough to find their bearing as more figures pressed in behind. First priests and the attendants from the church party, but then the nuns, and on their heels the novices, and nobody moved to stop them. With hardly a word spoken, the entire assembly shuffled along the left side of the hall and up onto the tiered seating at the far end. The last few backsides were settling by the time Abbess Glass came through the main doors, escorted by two church guards, supported by Sister Rock, a solid and hatchet-faced Red Sister on one side, and by Sister Rose on the other, still adjusting the edges of a mass of linen bandages that bulked the Abbess's hand into something almost spherical. Abbess Glass seemed unsteady on her feet, allowing herself to be led. The guards took her to stand before the lowest tier of the seating. When she passed Nona, the Abbess shot her a quick look, fleeting, but long enough for Nona to see those same shrewd, dark eyes that had assessed her that first day back at the base of the gallows. Nona searched the stands. The classes were mixed together, novice sat by none, but she spotted Clara and Ruli huddled together on the second tier. A glimpse of colour drew Nona's gaze a little way behind the girls, Sister Apple's red hair escaping her headdress, Sister Kettle tight beside her, no less close than Clara sat with Ruli. The High Priest stood in the highest tier, his hat discarded, wet grey hair plastered back across a reddened forehead.
"Sister Wheel! Sister!"
He glanced at the black-clad man beside him who muttered something.
"Sister Rose, you are, I understand, the Sister Superiors at Sweet Mercy, deputized with authority in the Abbess's absence, and as a prisoner of church law she is absent from authority. So, it falls to you to administer the ordeal of the shield to this novice."
Sister Rose said something inaudible and hurried over towards Nona, her fatness jolting and jiggling around her.
"Oh, my dear!"
She dropped heavily to her knees, ignoring the guards, and took Nona's hands in hers. Suddenly, Nona wanted to cry. She felt like a child, as she had been in the mists of her memory, when her mother's arms were a fortress and a haven. She shook herself free of Sister Rose's embrace. Her mother had let them give her to the child-taker. The weakness Sister Rose offered wouldn't help her.
"What do I have to do?" she asked.
Sister Rose's eyes darted past her, to where the practice dummies stood, crowded together on their round bases, each of them a leather man shape, about 6 foot tall, battered by innumerable punches and kicks. The dummies would rock back when struck, absorbing the force of a blow, then bounce forward as the lead in their base pulled them upright once more.
"Well,
When the bigger girls, the new sisters, I mean, it's been a few years now. Kettle was the last. She took spear and dagger.
Sister Rose struggled to her feet, shaking her head.
You there!
She waved to a couple of guards by the main door.
We need one of the practice shapes moved against that wall.
She turned back to Nona, looked to the stands, then back at Nona.
But this is madness.
Madness or not, the two church guards crossed to the dummies and began to haul one to the spot that Sister Rose had indicated, its base leaving a smooth and wide depression in the sand.
Wait!
The high priest rose from his place on the highest bench.
The shield protects the Agatha, a precious gift from the ancestor, not some lump of leather-bound horsehair. Let us have her defend flesh and blood, at least, so there is some echo of the pressure under which such work must be done.
He held his hand out towards Nona and looked around, his smile returning.
Who will volunteer?
He turned his gaze left, then right.
Have you no faith in this shield?
Sister Kettle made to stand, biting her lip, but the poisoner caught her arm and dragged her back, her brow furrowed, eyes intense. They fell to furious whispering.
No one?
The high priest spread both his hands and his grin now.
I will.
Sister Tallow got to her feet just 5 places along from the high priest, unwrapping the wet sling from her arm as she did so. She started to move along the bench towards the steps, nuns and archons standing to let her by.
I think not.
The high priest leaned his staff into Sister Tallow's path as she reached him.
Mistress Blade, is it not? How would we know, those of us with slow eyes, if it were the child who defended you, or if you defended yourself? I would tell you.
Sister Tallow narrowed her eyes into a stare, whose discomfort Nona could feel across the hall. The high priest wilted before it.
Yes, yes.
He rallied as a new thought struck him.
But the child could hardly defend someone as tall as you, Mistress Blade. She barely reaches past your hip. We must pair her with someone close to her own stature, no? For a fair test.
He didn't wait for an answer.
We need a novice. If there are no volunteers, then that lack of faith speaks for itself. She can hardly be the shield if no one believes in her. As well as defend, the shield must represent and carry our belief.
The high priest looked around, his gaze running across the crowded seating.
A novice, a girl from her own class, would be most suitable. Who is ready to put their lives in this criminal's hands?
Nona wondered how many of those present had seen the ordeal of the shield undertaken. None of the novices, if Sister Kettle had been the last to take it. Perhaps there were demonstrations, or maybe just stories, and sometimes the story of a thing created more fear than the reality. Either way, none of Red Class were leaping to their feet. Clara had her eyes down, staring at the back of someone's head. Beside her, Ruli was at least looking at Nona, but with a wide and hopeless stare. She spotted Ketty and Gaina together, the former pale, her mouth half open, the latter scowling furiously as if she'd just been insulted. Behind them and to the right, 2 shaved heads, Jula seemed to be crying, Arabella about to open her mouth, perhaps to laugh.
No one?
High Priest Jacob pressed his lips into a thin smile.
The matter is settled.
I will.
Hessa had been bending down for her crutch. Now she used it to get to her feet. Nona's eyes misted. The story running wild through the convent was of how she had failed to save Sida, how she had let her friend die. She hadn't expected any of them to trust her, to protect them. She looked down at her hands, made fists of them, and squeezed until it hurt. Hessa made her way down from the seating with agonizing slowness, awkward on the steps, all eyes upon her.
The High Priest leaned forward to the tier below him and tapped Sister Wheel on the shoulder. In the hush as Hesse descended the last steps, High Priest Jacob's voice carried further than perhaps he intended.
Not chosen to be a Red Sister? She's not Quantal.
Sister Wheel muttered something in reply. Nona heard the word waste in the High Priest's answer. Maybe he thought Quantal blood too precious to spill in such an exercise. But Sister Wheel seemed unconcerned, perhaps willing to pay that price to rid the convent of a peasant, and a crippled one at that. Hesse stumped across the sand to join Nona and Sister Rose, swinging her withered leg, the foot leaving shallow scuff marks behind her. She offered Nona an uncertain smile, the blue of her eyes darker than Nona had ever seen it.
"You shouldn't do this," Nona said.
"I'm your friend," Hesse said. "Besides, you'll protect me."
Nona's eyes widened. "Friend?"
"Of course, silly. You don't think Claire is your only friend, do you? People can be friends without saying so."
Nona opened her mouth and found that she had run out of words. She had vowed that she would never let a friend down, that she would do anything, anything at all, to protect them. A vow more sacred to her than the ancestor, more holy than the church from tallest spire to lowest crypt. The idea that someone might count her as a friend without her knowledge or agreement suddenly complicated things. Sister Rose set her hands to their shoulders. "Do you both understand the trial?" Nona shook her head, but Hesse replied,
"I have to stand still, and Nona has to defend me from a thrown spear and a throwing sar, and... Are there four stages in the full trial, or three?"
"There are."
"Sister Rose,"
the High Priest calling down from the back of the stands,
"get them ready, if you will, and provide Captain Rogan with a spear."
At his words, one of the church guards standing at the main doorway stepped forward, not a gerund, but well over 6 foot and solid in chest and limb. He removed his helm and brushed back short brown hair sprinkled, like his short brown beard, with grey. A pallid scar pulled his mouth into a sneer. His eyes, though, were neither cruel nor kind, only incurious, as if throwing a spear at little girls was just another of the day's duties. Sister Rose steered the two girls towards a part of the wall covered by a splintered wooden hoarding. Nona felt a tremble in the woman's hand.
"Do your best, Nona."
Her voice wavered.
"Oh, dear. And Hesse, don't be scared. Sister Tallow says Nona is very fast, and I'm sure the abbess is right. She had a vision, and..."
The nun choked on the next word, instead taking them into her arms, pressing them both against her fatness. Nona was surprised to find herself not wanting to be let go of. The ordeal hadn't scared her until the High Priest had put a person's life in her hands, and now that person was Hesse, her friend Hesse.
"Sister Rose!"
The High Priest's voice, not well pleased by the delay. The nun struggled, weeping, to her feet, and let Sister Flint lead her off. Flint glanced back once, dark eyes finding Nona's. A curt nod, and she looked away, helping Sister Rose to the back of the hall. Nona turned and stepped closer to Hesse, so close their noses almost touched.
"Don't move. I won't have time to look at you. I have to know you're where I put you."
"I'll do my best."
Hesse gave a weak smile, very pale now, glancing towards Captain Rogan, now being presented with a spear from the stores.
"In any case, it takes me ages to get anywhere."
The captain hefted his weapon, a plain ash shaft nearly 2 yards long, iron shod, the blade narrow, designed to penetrate armour.
"You have anything heavier, broadleaf?"
Sister Tallow narrowed her eyes to the man.
"Nothing heavier. We have blade-headed spears, if your desire is to cut as much flesh as possible, Captain."
The man shrugged and waved away the suggestion with no apparent embarrassment.
"This will serve."
The High Priest stamped staff to floor.
"Let's get this nonsense over with."
Nola looked towards Abbess Glass, and the Abbess gave her the same calculating look she had given that day at the prison, tossing whore apples at her. Nona turned, set her hands to Hesha's shoulders, positioned her, then faced the captain, taking 5 paces forward. Less time to see the spear coming, more time for any slight deflection to grow.
"Sister Wheel, if you will adjudicate."
The High Priest opened his palms in a gentle shoving motion, and, taking the hint, the nun descended to the sands, moving in that strange gangling way of hers that seemed as if it should belong to something not born of a woman. Nona spent the wait studying the captain, watching the gleam of his breastplate, the sway of the iron-studded leather tongues of the undershirt as it divided into a skirt to protect his upper legs, the bright point of his spear, the thickness of his arm. At last Sister Wheel took her place at the middle of the hall and raised her hand.
"Ancestor witness this, our trial of faith and swiftness, the Argatha's shield."
She looked left, right.
"Ready?"
She let her arm fall. Nona lengthened her heartbeats and watched. The captain's arm hooked back, launched forward, sliding through the air, a wordless roar on his lips. Fingers opened at the full extension of his arm, releasing the spear's shaft. Nona wrapped a world about her, watching the bright steel point of the blade pulse slightly up and down as the spear's shaft flexed with the power of the throw. Captain Rogan aimed his throw at Nona's heart. She began to twist to the side. Swiftness depends on reaction, on the speed with which the mind understands what the eyes show it, and with which it sends its orders to the body. No matter how fast those messages, though, there are limits to what muscles can do. Nona knew that a finger can be moved more swiftly than a hand quicker than an arm faster than a body. She worked to move her torso from the path of the spear's flight, her thin body suddenly heavier than iron, sullenly resisting her strength as she strove to shove it aside. While she twisted, she raised her arms, readying her hands, one atop the other, backs flat to her chest. Every part of the hall lay frozen. Faces, eyes, the shower of sand from the captain's heels hanging in the air. Only Nona moved, Nona and the spear sliding inexorably towards her heart. By the time the steel point reached her, in the thick, deep silence of her speed, Nona had almost twisted clear of the line that joined its sharpness to her friend's heart. The widest part of the blade touched her fingers as it passed. The trickle wouldn't reach her for a while yet, but her muscles had already been primed to push, and with near-perfect timing, they did, driving her palm against the haft of the spear. At speed, everything refuses motion with an obdurate stubbornness, as if the air itself were thickest mud. Although the weight of the spear proved problematic, Nona had 2 advantages. Firstly, she was applying pressure right at the end she wished to deflect, just behind the spearhead. Secondly, she was sufficiently in advance of her friend that moving the spearhead just an inch at this point would see it miss Hesha entirely. Nona shoved with all the strength and speed that lay in her limbs. The wooden shaft slid across her palm. A moment's panic washed through her as she realized that if she continued to push after the spear's midpoint had passed across her hands, she might be turning the spearhead back towards Hesha. Her mind spoke, but it took an age for her arms to cease their advance. The spear's midpoint had passed her hands, and several inches more had travelled across her palm when the contact ceased. The spear, now on its new path, her only chance to influence it, passed. Nona let the world spin up to its given speed around her, her gaze locked on Captain Rogan. If his spear killed Hesha, she would give him a new scar for his collection, and more besides. The impact thundered around her,
echoing back from walls and ceiling. For a moment there was only the voice of the spear, the shuddering of its shaft about a point now bedded deep, and then a rising cheer. Nona turned to see Hesse, just as she had left her, eyes crinkled shut but beginning to open, the spear standing proud of the wall, a 3-inch gap between its shaft and her upper arm.
"Thank you,"
Hesse gasped. She came forward on her crutch and put Nona in an awkward one-armed embrace.
"Proceed!"
On the stands the High Priest thumped his staff down.
"I assume this gets more taxing as we go." "The Throwing Star!"
Sister Wheel's cracked voice silenced the last remnants of conversation.
"Mistress Blade, if you will." "Not her. Wheel. You do it."
The High Priest waved Sister Tallow back to her seat.
"And put your damn arm into it."
"Sister Wheel?"
Nona snorted under her breath. She turned to Hesse.
"Good. What can she do?"
"Bad." Hesse shook her head.
"You don't know? She took her orders as a Red Sister. She passed all the trials, then renounced it to be a holy. She doesn't think Red Sisters are proper nuns, not close enough to the ancestors, she..."
"The Throwing Star!"
Sister Wheel had taken the captain's place and now held her hand overhead, a steel throwing star catching the light from the windows. The thing was almost on broken blade, a small heavy center, 5 broad, bright blades, gaps behind and between them, where Sister Wheel held it. Quite how she would release it in the throw without slicing her own fingers off, Nona didn't know.
"Ancestor witness this, our trial of faith and swiftness."
Sister Wheel narrowed her eyes at Nona, as if she were the target, not Hesse. She shook her long arm, twisting the over-flexible wrist. Her eyes, normally wide as if in permanent and vaguely comical surprise, became something else entirely when slitted. In those moments, something baleful and other than human watched the world through them. Nona brought her arms before her, hands crossed. Without further warning, Wheel shook her arm, cracking it like a whip to set the throwing star flying. The motion looked too casual to have imparted such speed, but the star sliced through the air considerably more swiftly than Captain Rogan's spear, revolving around its center, blades cutting sparkles from the light. It came spinning around the vertical axis, the disc of it parallel to the floor aimed at Nona's chest. Even if she could deflect the weapon by pressing at the side of it, she would need to push the thing off course by a large enough degree to send it over Hesse's head or into the ground before her. A huge deflection. To move it the small amount to miss Hesse to the left or right, Nona would have to press against the whirling blades. Even as she considered the matter, the throwing star devoured a third of the distance between them, and for once in her life, Nona found she could burrow no further into the space between her heartbeats. She started to extend one arm towards the oncoming star. With the other, she started to run her nails from the habit's cuff towards her armpit. The tough cloth parted beneath her fingers without resistance. When she was tiny, Billum Smithson had tried to hurt her. Nona had held her bloody hands out to her mother.
This was what was inside him.
The boy's skin had sliced where she touched him, 4 parallel wounds, as if she had invisible blades reaching from her fingers. The same had happened when she struck Ray Miltaxis, and again when she had reached to fend off his brother on the Abbess's steps. She had tried to make it happen many times, in long, boring hours, on dull days when the rain fell thick with ice. But only in Harriton Prison had the sharpness come to her outside a moment of panic or rage. The ropes that had bound her hands behind her had given way beneath her touch. Now her fingers sliced the sleeve of her habit into long ribbons. Perhaps they were shredding the skin and muscle beneath, too. There hadn't been time for any pain to reach her yet, or for any blood to fall. The throwing star approached Nona's outstretched hand just as her other hand reached her armpit and continued, now with just one finger extended, to slice a line across her chest. The star passed within a breath of the veins in her wrist, and whirred along just beneath her reaching arm where the ribbons of her sleeve had not yet had time to fall. It swept through them, cutting through whatever opposed it, but tangling other ribbons in the narrow spaces between the blades, winding them up about itself as it flew beneath Nona's elbow. When her finger reached her breastbone, Nona stopped cutting and reversed the thrust of her arm, pushing against the momentum of blood and bone, fingers cupped to scoop up the flap of cloth sliced free before them. The bundle-throwing star travelled the length of her arm, reaching the point where it would start to pass beneath her shoulder. Nona's other hand met it. The cloth of her habit balled into a palm, angled down and to the side. The force of the impact rippled up through her arm. Nona had done everything she could. She let the moment go. The thud of the cloth-wrapped star, the jolt of its impact up her arm, and the sharp pain in her hand all reached Nona at the same time. The star fell to the sand, its energy spent. Looking down, she saw her hand filling with blood and thought for a moment that her whole arm might be sliced open. But a darker spot among the crimson wash revealed the truth. One point of the throwing star had penetrated all the cloth layers to puncture her palm, a small hole, but deep and bleeding freely. The cheering rose around her as she tugged free a trailing strip of her sleeve and bound it tight about her hand.
"Cover yourself, girl!"
Sister Wheel stalked towards her, scowling her disapproval, peering at the shredded sleeve and the broad flap torn loose across Nona's chest.
"What have you done?"
"I protected Hessa,"
Nona bit down on the harsher words queuing behind her lips.
"You've ruined your habit."
Suspicious eyes ran over exposed flesh and the sharp upper edge of the rip across Nona's chest.
"How?"
Nona waved her sleeve, fixing Sister Wheel with her stare.
"Your throwing star chewed this up.
Would you rather it had been my flesh?" Something in the glare the Holy Sister returned suggested she just might.
"I hope the last round of this ordeal is rather more testing."
The High Priest broke the line that joined their eyes. Nona blinked and shook her head. She hadn't thought enough time had passed for the old man to limp down all those steps. She looked up at him, his scowl as ugly as Sister Wheel's, and found herself dizzy. The hand she raised to her face seemed to take an age. Voices buzzed around her like angry flies.
"Wrong with the girl,"
the High Priest snorted.
"She's hardly a shield, if the sight of a few drops of blood has her reeling around."
"I'm all right."
Nona didn't feel it, though. She felt weak in every limb, tired beyond endurance. A puppet with one string remaining, and if that would just let her go, she would lie face down in the softness of the sand and sleep.
"The last trial is the bow,"
Sister Wheel said, mouth pressed into an unreadable line.
"Fetch me a bow."
"No,"
the High Priest raised his hand.
"You've had your chance, Wheel. I have just the man for this, and just the bow. David?"
He raised his voice, looking around.
"David?"
A big man vaulted down from the first row of seating, one of the bearers for the High Priest's sedan's chair, his arms roped with muscle.
"Fetch the eagle bow from my luggage train. Go! Quick about it!"
The man sped off, sand flying from his heels. Nona stepped away until her back was against the wall. Hessa took her shoulder and tried to turn her.
"What's the matter? You look awful."
Nona slid until her bottom touched the floor. She bowed her head.
"Long night. Just tired."
The words slurred from her mouth. Had the throwing star been dipped in some kind of venom?
Just close my eyes.
You can't sleep.
But Hessa's voice seemed to be coming from a long way off, becoming little more than muffled echoes in the cavern whose darkness swallowed everything. A slap brought the world back, the daylight streaming through the narrow windows, the long murmur of conversation, and beneath it, the distant thunder of rain on the high roof.
Get up, girl!
Sister Wheel's other bony hand, knotted in the remnants of Nona's habit, hauled her to her feet. Behind the nun, Devid stood ready, his tunic soaked and sticking to him, sculpting the muscles of his chest and shoulders. The bow before him was nearly as tall as he was. Not a single arch like the hunters of the Grey used, but a composite of different curvatures and woods. In the hands of a skilled archer, such a bow truly could bring down the white eagles that rode the corridor wind. Though no peasant would ever protect his herd with one, the price of such a weapon would exceed that of any shepherd's flock, and his land to boot. The high priest stamped his way to the man's side.
Get this done!
Half the seats lay empty now, nuns, novices, guards, and bearers all crowding to either side of the line between Nona and Hessa, against the hall's north wall, and the archer before the south wall. Even Abbess Glass had been allowed to approach, her guard close by. Nona glanced at the abbess's right hand, fat with bandages, and at her own, the strip of fabric black with blood, the skin from fingertips to the heel of her palm red and sticky. Abbess Glass met her eyes and gave that same nod, sure and intense.
Ancestor, witness this our trial of faith and swiftness.
Sister Wheel waved the onlookers back. Devid pulled a long arrow from the quiver over his shoulder, white-fletched, perhaps with eagle feathers, the steel head long and narrow, designed to penetrate rather than slice. He knocked it to the bow and looked to the high priest, who gave him an impatient wave. Nona watched, her hands before her chest as before, one atop the other, the back of the left against her sternum, the palm of the right facing Devid and his bow. The man had a raw-boned, brutal face, as if the clay from which he had been formed had been in the ancestor's hands for no more than a moment, just long enough for bold strokes.
"She's only a child."
The words rumbled out of him so deep and low that Nona had trouble picking them apart.
"Both of them little girls."
He looked at the high priest again, helpless.
"You'll shoot that arrow hard enough to put it through the damn wall, Devid."
The high priest thudded down his staff, though the sand deadened the impact.
"The ancestor will decide who is worthy of tomorrow. There will be no sin on your hands. Now, do it."
Devid lifted one huge hand to rub an eye, shook his head, then returned the hand to the bowstring. He drew in a smooth motion, muscles bulging, veins standing proud along his forearm, the bow creaking with the strain. Held, held, and with a cry of anger or shame, let fly. The arrow came fast. No matter how hard Nona clung to each passing fragment of the moment, it flexed back and forth like a decked fish, shuddering with the power of the bowstring's push as it flew towards her. Its path from Devid's height to Hessa's heart would take it just over Nona's left shoulder. She threw herself backwards towards the ground and watched, helpless, hands outstretched and rising. To push against that thin shaft, to do so hard enough to deflect it from Hessa, and to give that push in the tiny span during which the shaft passed her by, would likely just break through it. And that would leave the arrowhead or the shaft behind it still travelling towards Hessa at lethal speed. Too quickly, allowing no time for thought, the arrow was before her. Hands already in place, already closing, now clamped upon the arrow. Nona saw her skin exit the tight curl of her fingers, carried away on the first emerging inch of the arrow shaft. The next inch slid out bloody. She wouldn't feel it until long after the arrow had found